Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Noam Scheiber, who is a senior editor at The New Republic. He has contributed to numerous other news sources, including The New York Times, The Washington Post, CNN, CNBC, and National Public Radio. His recent book, The Escape Artist, How Obama's Team Fumbled the Recovery, provides an insider's perspective on the Obama administration's economic team and the handling of the economic recovery. And he has an article at The New Republic, Countdown to a Shutdown. Welcome to Background Briefing, Noam Scheiber.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
And your sense is that this will be worse, this shutdown, than 1996. Why do you believe that?
Well, it depends how we look at it. But I, the line that I have in my piece about this is that, Republicans were able to hold out for 3 weeks in 1996. It started in late 1995. This time, that strikes me as almost unimaginable. And I go on to explain a variety of reasons why that would be. The most obvious is that everyone, who covers the White House and who covers Congress knows that John Boehner has been opposed to this strategy for months. He spent months trying to avoid it. He's spent months trying to persuade his own rank and file to avoid it. They have prevented him from doing that. They have revolted. They have said it has to be done this way. And so he's going along with it. But he clearly does not want to be executing the strategy. And the problem for him is not only that, the side that is less unified tends to lose these things, but it also gives the media that covers this an imprimatur to basically be extremely skeptical toward the strategy. It's a norm of political journalism that, you have to kind of be even-handed when you cover these things. But John Boehner, with his pretty outspoken opposition to the strategy internally, has basically made it okay for journalists to say, this is a dumb thing, this is a destructive thing for the GOP to do. Even their own leader, John Boehner, has been cautioning them against doing it. So I think just the way that the media dynamic is likely to play out as a result of that is different than it was in 96. And much more like, as I say in the piece, this confrontation that we had in late 2011 over the payroll tax cut, where the Senate, Republicans and Democrats in the Senate had passed a two-month extension of the payroll tax cut going into 2012. That deal was blessed by the White House. Everyone knew that John Boehner was in favor of it, but the Tea Partiers in the House revolted against him, and so he had to go along with them in rejecting that deal, and that blew up in their face, too. And it took all of 48 hours for them to give in, just because you have this similar dynamic where everyone covering this knew that it was disastrous. Everyone knew that Boehner knew that it was disastrous. And, you had this parade of conservative and Republican pundits on Fox News, on, all the usual organs of right-wing opinion, basically saying that this was idiotic. And it just didn't take very long for their resolve to collapse.
But Noam Scheiber, that hasn't stopped them from doing a sudden switch in their PR, because they do speak in unison. There's an echo chamber going there. You hear the same sound bites from almost everybody on the Republican side. But over the weekend, they did change. And as you've said in their article, they've scrambled over the weekend to present themselves as reasonable to attack Reid and Obama as obstructionists. If we have a shutdown, it will be because Harry Reid holds the absolutist position and essentially holds the American people hostage, Ted Cruz announced on Sunday. So it's pretty obvious to me that somebody out there is this just a last-minute attempt at some desperate PR window dressing, or what's the explanation for that?
Yeah, no, I think it is. They realize that they're heading into unfavorable terrain, and they're sort of trying to get their story straight. But the problem for them is that, the narratives on these things tend to get set months in advance. During that payroll tax fight in 2011, the narrative was Democrats, the Obama White House, the Senate, Democrats in the Senate wanted to extend this thing. Republicans did not. And so at the last minute, they sort of scrambled and tried to, throw a curveball and say, well, they actually wanted a full year-long extension. Democrats only wanted a two-month extension, so they were actually more sympathetic. But everyone who had been covering it for months and months knew that that was just not the case, and that they were sort of flailing for a way to kind of get purchase in public opinion. The same goes this time. Everyone who's been following this, every reporter who's been following this, knows shows that Democrats for months have just been pushing for the kind of clean, you know, extension without any sort of extraneous measures attached to it. And meanwhile, the GOP has been flailing around from one sort of extremist demand to another. You know, when we get to the last minute and the GOP says it simply wants to negotiate, it's just not a credible claim, given that the groundwork has been laid for months and months on this.
Again, I'm speaking with Noam Schreiber, who's a senior editor at The New Republic. He's also the author of The Escape Artist, How Obama's Team Fumbled the Recovery, and he has an article at The New Republic, Countdown to the Shutdown. But there is, of course, this binary nature of American press where in the universe of discourse, there are two black and white opinions on the one side and on the other side. And this, is, of course, has led to a cynical notion on the part of Fox News to be all about balance. And you know, it's led, for example, to denial of global warming because it's given an opening to the deniers because that's just another opinion as opposed to scientific fact. So it seems to me that I was watching local news, TV news, and it's all he said and she said. I think NPR, I remember during the last shutdown or the threatened shutdown of the full faith and credit, that they also covered it as he said and she said. So do you think this time that convention will be overcome by the flagrant nature of the facts here?
Yeah, you know, look, I agree with you that norm, that tendency is palpable, and it can be maddening to watch these stories play out precisely for that reason. I think the problem for the GOP this time is there have been too many dissenters in their own ranks to sustain that. I mean, John Boehner is the most prominent one, probably, though he's not on the record. We just know from sort of, reporting that he is very much against this, and from his actions. I mean, he's certainly tried to head it off in a variety of ways. But, you know, you don't need John Boehner. I mean, there have been, double-digit Republican senators who have warned that this is a terrible, terrible idea, and not just sort of moderates. I mean, you have people like Bob Corker and Susan Collins, who's on the record today in a Politico piece. You have John McCain. Those are kind of the usual suspects for questioning kind of extremist Tea Party or strategy. But, you know, you've had people with real conservative credentials in the Senate, you know, Richard Burr of North Carolina, Tom Coburn of Oklahoma, extremely conservative senator, who said this is just completely idiotic and self-sabotaging. So when you have that many Republicans criticizing their own party, it gives the media a permission to basically draw that conclusion itself when otherwise they would be constrained by this norm that you talk about.
But do you think that the senators, I mean, all politicians are grandstanders to a degree, but in the Senate there's a certain level of decorum, at least an attempt at it. And do you think Ted Cruz crossed that line where he was so flagrantly using the Senate chamber as a platform for fundraising and promoting his own future political career when he did that faux filibuster? Do you think that really irked his colleagues?
I did, yeah. And, you know, the other bits and pieces of that story have come out in recent days, one of which is just he was actually coordinating the conservative opposition to Boehner in the House. So it wasn't just within the Senate, but he was reaching across the Capitol and basically trying to incite rebellion in Boehner's ranks. And you can imagine that would not go over well in the GOP leadership. So there's no, definitely no love lost between John Boehner and the conservatives who've been kind of riling up his rank and file. I think Boehner would like nothing more than to see Ted Cruz sort of thoroughly embarrassed in this particular episode if he can swing it. And, you know, that he may get his wish. I mean, I think in a few days, as I say, I think the response, you know, both among conservative politicians, Republican politicians, and the kind of the outlets of conservative media outlets, you know, Fox News, National Review, Weekly Standard, the volume of criticism is going to be rising, by the hour, I think. I mean, again, if you look at that 2011 payroll tax cut, initially there was some quibbling initially and some anxiety expressed before the House GOP took the plunge and rejected the Senate deal that that had been cobbled together by Mitch McConnell and Harry Reid. After they had done that, it was really overwhelming. I mean, Karl Rove was on Fox News saying that they had misplayed this. National Review kept referring to it as the GOP's payroll tax mess. I mean, all the usual allies were just turning on them, and they rapidly found themselves isolated. I expect something similar this time out. And, you know, if that happens, I do think Ted Cruz is going to get a lot of the blame. Now, Cruz will probably use this for his own nefarious ends and just raise money and denounce the, you know, the Republican leadership in Washington as you know, appeasers and, you know, accuse them of caving to Obama just when they had, you know, Obama on the run. But I think the reality will tell a different story.
But if for example, a true believer thought that they could fly and was standing on a cliff with, you know, homemade wings attached to their arms, and an aeronautical engineer said to this person, you are going to crash and burn, and yet his followers said, no, he's going to fly off like a bird because they believe. And so you have seasoned pragmatists in the Republican Party, traditional conservatives, all pretty much from what you've told us, saying this is a terrible idea and they're against it. And even the Wall Street Journal refers to it as suicide.
Sure.
Then you have this other caucus who are determined to do it and are simply not listening to the facts and to reason. So what does it say about our governance and about our country? Is it really operating on faith and fumes as opposed to facts and reason?
Oh, no question. It's incredibly depressing, discouraging development. No question about that. I agree with you. It's there's no element of empiricism or logic or rationality here. But I think the only measure of comfort that you can take from your analogy is at a certain point, they do jump and then gravity asserts itself. and suddenly, you know, all of the claims about gravity that had existed beforehand that the extremists regarded as purely theoretical, some suddenly become very real and practical. And that's precisely why I think we needed to take this step. The political system needed this, you know, just so that gravity could assert itself, because they were not willing to believe anyone's opinion about gravity. So it's actually important for this to happen, to show them that there are constraints to their actions.
So the American people have to suffer in order for certain radical politicians to learn what everybody knows, that if you put your hand in a fire, you get burnt.
It's unfortunate, though I would say that you know, better to for them to learn it, and better for the suffering that they inflict in the course of learning it to be on a relatively smaller scale than in a couple of weeks when we have to raise the debt ceiling, and the failure to do that could have much more serious consequences. So, like you, I wish that that no one had to suffer for a small minority of extremists to learn that, you know, there are rules of the world, and that you can't just suspend gravity just by wishing it away. But unfortunately, you can't reach them that way. The only way you can reach them is by having them jump off a cliff and crash. And I would much rather them crash when, you know, the stakes, though serious, are lower than when the stakes are sort of existential, possibly apocalyptic.
So, Noam Schieber, there's two possible outcomes, and I guess it's too late for the first in a sense that there was a possibility that, for example, there'd be a compromise over that the medical device tax, which, of course, the manufacturers of medical devices lobbied heavily for it. But that doesn't look like it's going to happen. So I would have thought that the two possible outcomes would be that for the Republicans to sort of back off this time and save their big guns for mid-October over the debt ceiling. Then the other scenario would be that they'll get so burned by the shutdown that it will moderate their behavior in mid-October over the debt ceiling. So how do you think this is going to play out?
Yeah, no, I think the latter. Look, I don't think this is going to be a long-term proposition. They will continue to be crazy, and that craziness will manifest itself in a variety of destructive ways. So, you know, just them just crashing once by jumping off a cliff isn't going to solve our problems, everything that ails American government. But I do think that having a fight the next fight, it does give the John Boehners, the more rational elements of the Republican Party, a little more credibility when they say don't do this. You know, whereas had they not done this, had they averted a shutdown, and the conservative wing of the House Republicans felt like, you know, their leadership had basically not listened to them and forced them to concede when they should not have, then they would be even more sort of riled up for the next fight, which is the debt limit, and it would have been very difficult to walk them back. So I do think this has played out for the best. I mean, what was so ironic about it is that, Boehner tried to avoid the shutdown and divert all of this pent-up extremism and extremist energy at the debt limit, at the debt ceiling showdown a few weeks later, which I thought was incredibly cynical and irresponsible. And he was only saved, and we were only saved, by the sort of absolute insistence by his conservative members and having their tantrum now, not 3 weeks from now. So in a way, the sheer irrationality of these guys is actually, they're so irrational that they've actually saved us from a potentially bigger problem, because they insist on sort of blowing things up now rather than later.
But, you know, just in closing, and I'm sure, but one of the sort of basic tactics one understands from SWAT teams and other negotiators who deal with hostage crises is that sometimes, you know, you can't continually appease terrorists, you know?
Right.
I mean, that it's just, in fact, we have a policy that we won't negotiate with terrorists.
Sure.
And I'm just astounded at the Boehners of this world, whose entire policy seems to be to appease terrorists and hope somehow that they'll stop doing what they're doing, when that defies logic, because the more you concede to extremists, the more it whets their appetite.
No, I agree. I mean, Boehner has clearly has behaved with less than a complete integrity here. I mean, look, he's clearly concerned about his job. I don't know how much longer he wants to do it, but he certainly doesn't want to be deposed. And so he is trying to kind of tack this way and that from one day to the next just to preserve himself, which, again, is a cynical way of operating, but it's clearly the way he's chosen. I'm just relieved, frankly, that that the president has learned his lesson, because, of course, back in 2011, when we did this first dance around the debt ceiling, he thought that he could negotiate it with them as well, and that obviously ended badly, but it could have ended, disastrously. So I'm glad that he's drawn the lesson from that, you can't negotiate with extremists. He's been sort of admirably tough, I think, in saying that he's not going to negotiate on the debt limit, and that they've got to just extend funding for the government without a bunch of extraneous stuff attached. I'm glad that he and Harry Reid in the Senate have stuck to that position. It's proved to be a smart way to approach it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, Noam Schreiber.
No problem. Enjoyed it.
Again, I've been speaking with Noam Schreiber, who is a senior editor for The New Republic and has contributed to numerous other news sources, including The New York Times, The Washington Post, CNN, CNBC, and National Public Radio. His recent book, The Escape Artist, How Obama's Team Fumbled the Recovery, provides an insider's perspective on the Obama administration's economic team and their handling of the economic recovery. And he has an article at The New Republic, Countdown to the Shutdown. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about how did conservatives get this radical.
Bruce Rodner!
Sit down, man.
Glenn Beck!
Sit down, man.
Rand Paul!
Sit down, man.
LL Cool J!
Sit down, man.
Netanyahu!
Sit down, man.
Sarah Palin!
Sit down, man.
Newt Gingrich!
Sit down, man.
Toby Keith!
Sit down, man.